Hello and welcome to Believe It or Not, part 6 of the 3-Bid League preseason preview podcast. For those of you just joining us now, you can go back in the archive. We've already covered each of the 14 teams individually throughout the last month plus. Today, we're going to have a little bit more fun. We're going to discuss our hot takes and predictions for the season and the only tradition that has lived on through each of the 3 years of our preseason previews. We're going to play a game of over-unders. But Matt, it's not just me and you this time. We got an old friend back on the pod. Many of you heard him on here about 7 months ago. I want to say a quick welcome to Stu Ledecky of Busting Brackets.
Thank you, sir. Good to be back. Nice to see you guys again. Good to be talking hoops after about 9 months off, too. So let's get it.
Yeah, if anyone wants to go back, probably the only pod of ours that still holds up from the first half of the year, the three of us discussed the top 20 players in the A-10 for this upcoming season. I'm sure all three of us have probably changed our lists a little bit since then, but, you know, I know my list at least somewhat holds up, so something interesting if people are looking for some more preseason content. So, Matt, why don't you get us kicked off here?
All right, sounds good. Yeah, our first few preview episodes, while those were fun, I felt like we were a little bit too fair in those. Not enough, like, bold opinions were being shared. So now it's time for that to change. And I want to start with a team that I'm really high on this year. I don't think anyone else is, and there's probably a good reason for that after what happened last year. I think Davidson's going to be really good. They're going to sneak up on some people. Tyler, I see you nodding your head against me. But my bold prediction, I think most people would have Fats Russell as the leading scorer in the A-10. I'm going to say it's Kelvin Grady. This is his team. He's going to average 22 points a game, lead Davidson to a double bye.
Okay, double bye for Davidson. So who of the traditional picks are you knocking out to get them there?
Man, I got to think back. So I'm not quite as high in St. Bonaventure. I think they were in the preseason poll at number 4.
Yeah.
And then I'm also sticking back with what I said to you guys way back in April. I'm still not a big fan of St. Louis this year. Maybe we'll get to that later with one of my other bold takes, but I just don't think they're going to be good enough offensively. So I'm bumping out St. Bonaventure and St. Louis. I'm actually going to have another team, too, entering the top 4 that we haven't talked about yet. But just really like Davidson, I think they're still going to be great offensively. To go along, I guess I'll just keep it with the Davidson hot takes. I think Hyungjoon Lee is going to be an all-conference player because if Davidson is going to reach their ceiling, they're going to need another star. And I just love what I saw from him last year. I had him ranked really high way back in April when we did this. So sticking with that, I think he's going to have a big year.
So you're not worried about their size down low? You think they have enough good guards and depth to mitigate that?
The depth is kind of a concern in the post. I am really hoping one of their freshmen, Sam Menenga from New Zealand, I know he practiced with the team last year. He's maybe the most highly rated, at least one of the most highly rated freshmen coming into the A-10 this year. Yeah. I think he's going to provide a lot of help down low because really, other than Luka, they didn't have a ton down there. So yeah. I'm thinking he's going to make a big impact, but defensively, I mean, they're still not going to be great. I'm kind of just banking on them having one of the best offenses in the conference, which sure. They did last year, despite not being that great of a team. They were still excellent offensively. I think they were actually the second best behind Dayton.
Yeah.
So yeah. I wanted to make a hot take involving the conference's leading scorer, but, you know, the more I think about it, I can't predict that it won't be Fats Russell. I think especially with all those transfers rolling in, there's going to be a lot of young guys who are going to defer to him as opposed to Jeff Doughton, who was 1 year his senior. And, you know, I think Fats Russell's shots attempted this year is just going to blow our minds. And if he can even be just a tiny bit efficient, I really think he's going to lead the conference in scoring this year. He should be able to cruise to 22, 23 points a game.
Yeah, I think that's fair. It's possible that some of those transfers step up, but at this point we know zero about most of them. So that's probably a safe bet to say.
Yeah. I think for me, I'm just not super high on Rhode Island this year. I I'm a little worried about Fats. I think losing Dalton and Langevin and some of their other guys that transferred out, I feel like that might hurt him a little bit, and he might be a little bit less efficient this year. But also, I mean, even though we don't know much about these transfers, I do think some of them seem like they can score a decent amount. And
yeah, Shepard.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to have to take all their shots. I mean, it could be more than last year very well, but I don't think he's going to need to – he's not going to need to carry them like Ryan Daly did for St. Joe's last year, I think.
Yeah. Should I set it off with my hot take number one?
Yep.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, I got GW going at least 500 in A10 play. So
that was all. That was one of my takes.
Oh, really?
Exact take.
Okay, well, I'll just rip through why for myself, and you can tell me it was the same reasons. But first of all, like Jamie and Christian. Second of all, like the freshman class last year, and you know about that, especially in the A10 freshman to sophomore bump. I feel like Jamison Battle could end up being like as high as second team all conference if things go right. And then you got all the transfers. I know it's kind of like Rhode Island where we don't know much about them because they weren't great at their last stop, but the potential has to be appreciated with just how good they are in terms of raw talent and how good they were coming out of high school and where they got recruited to and played before, as far as Ricky Lindo at Maryland, Matt Moyer at Vanderbilt being a four-star, James Bishop, who people think could be one of their best players from LSU. If you just add that to Jameer Nelson and Jamison Battle, I feel like that already is a good rotation, but then there's a lot of potential for guys that we know nothing about in this freshman class, which could be underrated to step up to.
So you hit one of my two biggest reasons. I really believe in Jamie and Christian. Probably my favorite new coach in the A-10 coming out of his rookie year since Keith Dambrot. I think he's just going to be absolutely fantastic this season. But for me, I see a path to stardom for Jameer Nelson Jr. I think he's ready to step into the production that Arnell Potter brought them last year. He's going to be their great penetrator. And the shooting around him should be even better than it was for Potter last year. He's a fearless guy. He's got no problem getting himself to the line. We talked about this all the way back in April, that the final month of the season, he bumped up his free throw rate significantly. I think he's going to be a great engine for them. And the transfers you talked about will basically just make everything around him better and make life easier for Jameer Nelson Jr.
For sure. I'm thinking Jamison Battle could end up being like second team all conference, but Nelson has that same ceiling.
I really want to believe in GW, just one for like all the mayhem that gets talked about. I love that Jamie and Christian brought that to GW.
Yeah.
I've gone on the record, I think, saying that I think within the next 2 or 3 years, GW will be contending for an A-10 title, just because I love the talent he's bringing in.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't know about this year for me. I wanted to bump them up, and I think I have them the highest out of like the sort of bottom tier of agreed upon teams there.
Yeah.
I do think they have a high ceiling with all the transfers. I just look back at, I mean, last year they did, you know, they beat some decent teams. They also lost to some terrible teams,
yeah,
especially early in the season, and then to Fordham 3 times, which still can't be forgiven. So I think it's going to be too much of an uphill climb. I do think it is kind of a disservice that, I know KenPom, I think T-Rank also might have GW the lowest ranked team in the A-10, which I don't think that's right at all. I think they're gonna win some games and they're gonna knock off some good teams, but I just don't know if they can quite get to 500.
Yeah, and their schedule is not super easy, so it's a little bit of a reach. But we gotta bring the heat on the hot takes episode. So here we go.
So I'll kick off my first Power 8 hot take with a lukewarm take. Since Matt just told us something that I think anyone who listens to a bunch would find to be an obvious guess from him, I'll give an obvious one for me too. TJ Weeks is going to be an all-conference player this year in his return from injury. I don't feel the need to really go on and on about this. I've talked about it so many times already. He has the purest shot of any guy who's better than a specialist that the A-10 has seen this decade.
Yeah.
And if he's healthy and he can keep his rebounding numbers high, then he's an all-conference player immediately.
In regardless of my bias, I totally agree with that.
No surprise there. I'm excited to see what Weeks does, though. I think we got a glimpse of what he can do last year. Just unfortunately, his season got cut short really early. But yeah. I do think UMass, like they, I mean, I'm sure Stu, you can shed more light on this, but it could have been a much different conference season because it seemed like they really struggled the first few games without him. And I just think UMass, they're going to be so exciting with how much shooting they're going to have on the court around one of the best players in Trey Mitchell. That's going to be fun to watch.
Yeah. As far as TJ, I agree with everything you said. I think he shot like 48% from three last year. That's going to come down, but it's like you were saying, Tyler, where it's such a smooth release where, like, even if it comes down, you imagine he'll still be up around, like, 44, 45. And one thing that's encouraging him is that about him is that his inside-the-arc game was actually kind of bad last year, but you could tell that he has the physical tools. Like, he's got a decent handle. He can get up there. He almost did a few one-handed dunks over people last year. If he can get that part of his game too, he could, I mean, I don't know, he could end up maybe eclipsing Trey and scoring, but I'm not going to bet on that, but it's possible with his tools.
I think those two could potentially combine for something in the high 30s, maybe even 37, 38 points a game once they both get rolling by January.
Yeah, I think that's fair. What do you got for a hot take, Matt?
All right, I'm going to talk about another team where nobody's a big fan of them after how they disappointed last year. I'm starting to talk myself into VCU being decent. I'm not picking them to, you know, be a double bye team or anything like that, but
yeah,
I look at this team, I just see a lot of athletes, especially with some of the freshmen and transfers coming in. And so my next Power 8 hot take, I think VCU is going to have one of the two best defenses in the A-10. We saw Mike Rhodes build a nationally elite defense when they went to the tournament 2 years ago. I look at this team again. I mean, their front court is so solid. I think Corey Douglas and Hassan Ward, the returning guys, are two of the better defensive big men in the conference. They bring in a 7'1" transfer, Brendan Medley-Bacon, which I think he's going to be super exciting. He's probably going to be an excellent shot blocker. And I still think, you know, you look at the backcourt, there's just a lot of energy there. I think Bones in particular, I don't think he's quite Marcus Evans yet, but he's one of the better defensive point guards, I think. And then some of their other guys that didn't get a whole lot of a chance last year, like Keyshawn Curry, Jared McAllister. I like those guys on defense too, and I thought they brought a lot of energy, so...
Yeah.
I think VCU, they're going to be kind of bad offensively. I don't know who's going to score, which is why I have them kind of stuck in the middle of the pack. But I think they're going to have a lot of low scoring games, and they're going to win some games with their defense.
Yeah. They'll probably win a lot of ugly games a la St. Louis in these last few years. My hot take also has to do with VCU, so I'll shoot it in there. Speaking of Bones Highland, I'm going to predict at least – I'm going to say he almost doubles his last year scoring total with at least 18 points a game. Mm-hmm. Just because it's like you said, somebody needs to score, and somebody really random will, like one of these – like Ace Baldwin could end up putting up 12, who knows, Hassan Ward, whatever. But I feel like as far as known commodities entering the season, he's one of the few people where it's like, okay, we can get him the ball – and good things will happen, and we know that. So I'm going to just, in terms of having that Fats Russell, Ryan Daly volume, I'm going to say he gets up there with 18.
I like that pick. I think what I like about that, even though, like, I don't know if it's going to translate to wins for VCU because it didn't last year, but, like, even when Bones wasn't getting much help at the end of last year when everyone got hurt, he was still putting up good numbers himself. Because he is good at just creating his own shots, and he's a deadly three-point shooter. So I do like that. I think I would be surprised if he wasn't the leading scorer, because you're right, someone's going to have to step up for them.
Mm-hmm.
Stu, was that your second then?
That was my number two.
All right, so my hot take number two, Michael Hughes will be the defensive player of the year in the A-10.
Wow.
Despite not being on the preseason all-defensive team. I think we got probably about four or five defenses that have a chance to be really good this year. But when you look at them, most of them are ensembles. Like St. Louis, they got Jordan Goodwin and Hassan French and Yuri Collins. Duquesne has a chance to really be up there without – I don't want to say that they have other bad defenders because they have a lot of good defenders, but no other superstar on that end. I think Michael Hughes is actually going to clean up some of his foul problems this year. Like I mentioned on our Duquesne pod, last year you could see that even though he was still fouling a lot, they were much more productive fouls. He was trying to make plays. He was – no longer committing the stupid foul, setting a half-court trap. Mm-hmm. He just becomes a more disciplined player every time he steps out on the court. And if he can continue to get the blocks and steals that he gets now while cutting his fouls down maybe about a half of a foul a game, then that makes him one of the three best defensive players in the league. And for the other two, Jordan Goodwin and Jacob Gilliard, they're both on teams with other good defenders who could potentially overshadow them.
Yeah, true. Did you see, I think it was on KenPom, but did you see Hughes's efficiency numbers too last year? Because I think after Obi, I think he was second in the entire A-10 as far as net efficiency rating. And I'm sure most of that is from what he did on defense. So That sounds like a good pick to me. And I agree with you because on St. Louis, you have French, who's going to get a lot of blocks. That's going to distract people from Goodwin. Might not want to choose a side there. And then Richmond's entire team is like a swarm of bees. So I don't know what that's going to look like. So I agree.
Yeah, I think we talked about that on our last preview. Like if Hughes can be disciplined, he's got a good chance just with the numbers he put up last year in. You know, not a whole lot of minutes just because he was always in foul trouble. But, yeah, I like that call. I think it could happen. And I'll just keep it rolling with my next hot take because it's also about Duquesne. And this is the first time in the 3-Bid League podcast history where I think I might be more optimistic on the Dukes than you, Tyler. I've got Duquesne as my other double by team. And I think a big reason for that, in addition to Hughes improving on defense even more, I think Sincere Carey is going to be either on the first or second all-conference team. I think we're finally going to see the jump from him. He's been getting a ton of minutes his first 2 years with the Dukes. I think he's ready to be that leader. I love him driving to the basket. I just think, you know, for a team that kind of struggled to shoot the three at times last year, I think he can be the guy that can create offense and just, you know, when things are getting tough, I think he can always provide that spark. And I don't know. I've kind of talked myself into Duquesne just since they are one of those teams that brings back a lot, but also some of their newcomers too, which we talked about last week. I just think they're such a deep team. And they also won some big games last year too. I feel like people don't give them enough credit for that. They hung in there against Dayton. They killed St. Louis twice. Mm-hmm. They beat VCU on the road toward the end. They had some nice games.
And Dambrot is yet to not – overachieve on the preseason poll rankings. So I'm gonna disagree with your Duquesne at four pick only because my hot take is UMass finishing fourth, and it's partly because of what we already talked about with Trey and TJ. I've just been feeling more and more over the years the importance of having one of the best players in the conference is why I'm really high on Dayton, and I'll talk about that. And also UMass is just because of Trey Mitchell and what that could mean in a year where there's not any amazing teams. There's a lot of good ones, but no amazing teams. But UMass's schedule is also extremely favorable. They got Fordham twice, George Mason twice, LaSalle twice. I just feel like that combined with the fact that if you look at who they play poorly against, it's usually teams that are really good offensively moving off ball. Richmond, St. Bonaventure, Davidson, teams like that, well coached. And we play each of them once at home. So that in tandem with the softness of our bottom of the schedule, I'll take the odds.
So I don't have the stones to put UMass quite in the top four, but if we're going to say who is the most likely team outside of the preseason top five to get a double bye, I would actually have to take the Minutemen. So much of it just being around the fact that they have one of the five best guys in the conference in Trey Mitchell. I obviously already said, I think TJ Weeks is going to be an all conference player. And you know, you and all your buddies on UMass Twitter are kind of sucking me in on Noah Fernandez. I'm beginning to believe that he might be special. And you just start to do the math that if you have three guys as offensively gifted as those three appear to be, then that's going to be a team that's going to win at least 10 games. All of a sudden, you just got to figure out the intangibles to get you to 12 and you have a double bye.
Right. Yeah, it's not – I feel like everyone after St. Louis and Richmond, in most people's minds at least, like between three and like nine, is only a few breaks away from justifying any of them getting into the top four. So concur on all the UMass reasons, but also concur on the possibility of Dayton for you, Matt, or Duquesne for your pick, Matt.
Yeah, I think UMass is a team I've struggled with a lot. I've gone back and forth on what I think. This wasn't like quite, I don't know if it's quite enough a hot take for it to be its own, you know, discussion. I do think offensively they're going to be one of the three or four best teams in the conference just because you have one of the best players with Trey Mitchell. And then I love some of these newcomers. There's just going to be so much shooting and skill on the court. I think most of my concerns lie within their defense, which was pretty bad last year. I do think getting Fernandez and TJ Weeks back is going to help out quite a bit. But yeah. I don't know. I feel good about them offensively. I just think defensively, I see them as a below average team, which
is if we're trying to run that press, which was Swiss cheese at the beginning of the season, but got slowly but surely, it still wasn't great at the end, but it was at least serviceable at the end. But the problem all year was that we didn't have the depth for it and people would get tired. And then it was just like, all right, we're really at the back end of our bench now. And it was just Keon and Colton and guys like that were just getting too many minutes that won't have to this season. So that's why I'm encouraged about the D, is I just feel like it was a lack of depth before that was holding it back.
I still have some Colton Mitchell stock. I think all the UMass fans sold it. I get it. He's basically a liability on offense, but you know, he was so fantastic on defense. He's a decent passer. If you guys are going to keep running that press, they're going to need him.
Yeah, no, he'll definitely, I don't mean to disparage Colton. He will certainly have his role and his time, but he just, at certain points in the season, he had to be out there when we could have really used some scoring. And because he was so good on defense, we kept him out there. But now we'll be able to do a little more of, all right, we can put whoever is best for this exact situation in the game. Just got more to play with.
So for my third hot take, I actually wanted to save this for last, but it just fits in so well with what we're talking about right now. I think that as we head into the final day of the season, there will be 3 to 5 teams that still have a chance to clinch a share of the conference title, a la what we saw on the last day in 2016. The more I look at the preseason poll and kind of the general preseason predictions, I think that everyone's getting that top echelon of teams right. I just think that this whole idea of Richmond and SLU running away from everybody is what's wrong. Mm-hmm. I think that Duquesne and St. Bonaventure are basically at the same level as those two. And while I really think Dayton's front court's going to struggle for a big portion of the year, you can't throw away that team just because they have the best player in the conference in Jalen Crutcher. And while I actually don't think Dayton's going to be good enough for him to win player of the year this year, I do believe he will be the best player in the conference. And with him alone, plus two other great veteran guards as sidekicks and Anthony Grant on the bench, they're going to be in it. They're going to be in the double bye discussion, even if the defense and the rebounding struggle. So between those five, and I'll actually throw UMass into the mix too. I think three or four of those teams are going to have a chance to win the regular season title coming down the stretch. This is not going to be a runaway. And we could end up seeing seeds 1 through 4 separated by as little as a game.
Yeah, I agree with that. I probably would have, or I wouldn't have it, but I'm not mad about St. Louis and Richmond being ranked as the top two, but the way people are viewing it, I agree. It's like, it's them two and then everybody else. But it seems in actuality, like it'll be like, there won't be any two teams or even one team that run away, but more like five teams that are like top between 30 and 65 on KenPom, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't agree exactly with like the order of the teams, but I do agree that it's very close. And I guess this is actually, you know, this is a kind of one for me where it's a hot take and not a bold prediction.
Mm-hmm.
I've been kind of like offended this summer that I've seen multiple articles from respected national writers talking about how both Richmond and St. Louis could be like the Cinderella teams of this year. And like, I don't know, I think they're both going to be good. I also think people saw what Dayton did last year and think, oh, an A-10 team could be good like that again. And maybe that's just me having sour grapes that UD was robbed last year at the end, but
yeah.
I don't know. I don't see either of those teams doing anything close to what Dayton did. Maybe one of them or both will hover around the top 25 for a while, but I don't see anyone going like 17-1 or something like that.
Right. Yeah.
I think it's going to be close. I don't know if it's going to be as close as you thought, Tyler, where it's going to be five teams with a chance at the very end, but it's not going to be a year where someone runs the table. I'd be shocked. I just think the conference is too deep for the first, like, you know, 8 or 9 teams.
Yeah. And I'm going to piggyback off both of your ideas into mine because speaking of Dayton, one of my hot takes is that I got them winning the whole show. I think I mentioned it before with how important I felt Trey Mitchell was to UMass and how important he'll be in the landscape of the league for them. Because Dayton has Jalen Crutcher, because he's not alone. I know you already mentioned, Tyler, that he has not the greatest front court around him, but Evie Watson, probably underrated. If you just go down the line, there's a lot to be excited about. Is it Zimmy Nwokwesi? Is it Nwokwesi? How do you say his name?
We'll find out on the first game. I've been saying Nwokwesi, but I don't really know.
Yeah. However it is, he looks exciting in the highlights. I like their class. I think it's underrated. And what you were saying, Matt, about how they got robbed at the end of last year, I think they're going to come out with a chip on their shoulder. I think it's not like, I mean, if they had lost everyone from that team and didn't have a spiritual connection to it, it would be one thing, but it's not like they lost everybody from that team, you know, and including their second best player from last year who will be back and is seeing all the hype and is probably getting even madder beyond what happened last year about St. Louis and Richmond being ranked so highly. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, and we know Anthony Grant is for real. He proved that to as much as one can prove that. So send it. Dayton number one.
Wow. I got to say, like, I've been wrestling with the idea of putting Dayton first. I had Richmond first all off season, but when Nick Sherrod got hurt, I kind of had to reevaluate things. Yeah. So it feels good that maybe I'm not just being a total homer here. It's not going to be the same as last year, but I am pretty optimistic for Dayton. I really do think it's going to come down to the front court because we know like the starting back court, I think Crutcher, Chapman, and Watson, that's one of the best in the country.
Yeah.
But the front court's just very uncertain.
I think
it's really going to come down to see if like, if Jordy or Chase Johnson or Zimmy, one of them is going to need to step up. And if they can, I don't see why Dayton couldn't win the conference. But I do see why people have their doubts also.
Well,
those guys aren't
Johnson good. Continue to shoot 80% from the floor, whatever it was that he's.
Right. I hope so. Yeah, Chase Johnson is going to be like one of the biggest mysteries in the A-10. Because, I mean, Dayton fans did not expect him to come back. That was a nice surprise this offseason. And if he can to stay healthy, stay on the court this year. He has good numbers. We just haven't really seen him out there very much, but you're right.
Yeah.
So I'll go to my fourth hot take here. St. Bonaventure, who finished seventh last year, basically league average in scoring defense, they will have one of the two best defenses in the league this year. Matt, I know you threw out VCU for this earlier. I think it's going to be the two Saint teams. It'll be the Bonnies and St. Louis up at the top. It's not hot to say that St. Louis will be up there, but, you know, yeah. St. Bonaventure proved to us that when Asuna Shunahi is healthy and not in foul trouble, that they are elite on that end of the court. I think that a lot of their forwards really took positive strides on that end last season. One of the things I really like about them, Justin Winston, who we don't really talk about much as a breakout player because he just doesn't have a ton to his offensive repertoire so far. And with the guys around him, I'm not sure he's going to get many opportunities on that end. Mm-hmm. But I think he has a chance to be an elite lockdown defender at the power forward position, which is something that teams throughout the A-10 have really longed for in these past 3 to 4 years. There have just not been many Trey Landers type great versatile power forwards on defense in this conference. Justin Winston's going to get there. Asuna Shunahi will give his normal all defensive team level performance, and Dom Welsh and Kyle Lofton should provide enough on the perimeter to make the Bonnies a force on that end.
Yeah. So where do you have them finishing in conference?
So I go back and forth on this so much. I think that the top four is so close to me.
Yeah.
Right now, and this literally might change in the next 10 minutes, but I'm still holding on to the Bonnies as the regular season champion.
Okay. There we go. That's two straight hot takes about regular season champions that aren't Richmond or St. Louis. So keep at it.
I mean, I like the Bonnies. I'd say they're probably my second favorite A-10 team. Just over the years, I've enjoyed watching them. 8-0 against the bottom four last year. That's all I'm going to say. And that's why I'm not quite buying them. They didn't match up that well against the metrics last year. And their record wasn't even that great, despite having by far the easiest schedule. So maybe I'm just looking too deep into that. I think they're going to be pretty good. I don't see them as a contender, really. But, you know, if guys like Winston do show that big improvement on defense, because they do need someone with Oshun to be an elite defensive stopper, I think, then I would be wrong. But I don't know. I'm not quite feeling it for them.
I have the Bonnies at 5 right now, right behind UMass, but they're, like we've been talking about all night, they're another team that could either win the conference or finish 7, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to bet on somewhere in the middle, but I would not be surprised if they won the conference, just because of if you have Kyle Lofton, that's where you want to start. And then what else would you add around him? Okay, let's get one of the best rim defenders in the league. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now let's add some three-point shooting. Okay, they have that too. So definitely – and a pretty high floor too, higher than some teams. So, yeah, I'm in on the Bonnies.
I'm really starting to talk myself into all the transfers on the bench.
Mm-hmm.
And the odds of two of those three turning out are pretty high. They were just so atrocious offensively when they had to take any of the starters out, with the exception of the, like, what, 4 games that A.J. Vasquez was able to score. Mm-hmm. That was a crippling problem for them. Now, this all might go down the toilet if Asun gets hurt, because they have almost nothing behind him. But I really like the perimeter guys on this team this year.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Where are we?
I think it's our final take for everybody.
This is all right. Cool. Well, Dayton finishing first was kind of one of mine too, but we've spent enough time on that. George Mason's pretty much always overlooked on the 3-Bid League podcast, and that's held true tonight, so I'll talk about them for a little bit. I'm a big fan of one of their freshman guards, Ronald Pogait. I'm going to say that he makes the all-rookie team and emerges as their starting point guard, just because last year I felt like their offense seemed so dead to me, and I thought guard play had to do with some of that. They didn't have someone like Otis Livingston or Justin Kyer just making a lot of plays out there. And watching Polite, some of his highlights, he just seems like a really exciting player that can shoot it, and he's super athletic and quick. So I think he's going to provide a spark for the Patriots. still don't think they're going to be that particularly good as a team, but I think he's going to surprise some people and be one of the best freshmen in the league this year and earn a starting spot.
So you're not a big Xavier Johnson development guy?
I like him a lot on defense. I think he's super tough. Like, I remember him in the VCU game just playing nasty defense and creating a lot of turnovers. Mm-hmm. His offensive numbers were not that great. I see him having a role on that team, and I'm interested to see what he does in the future, but I don't know. He turned it over a lot. He can't really shoot yet. Yeah. If he could definitely prove me wrong on that, and I hope he does because he's fun to watch, but I just don't know if he's going to give them enough on offense.
It's the type of situation where if you're George Mason, you know you're probably going to finish like – I mean, you won't admit this, but it's probably a safe bet that you're probably going to not finish top five, top six. So, I mean, you might as well try something weird like that. I mean, you know you have a decent guy in guys like XJ, but you might as well – like if Polite has that kind of ceiling because of his athleticism, it might be worth it to take some shots like that.
Yeah, it could. I know some of their fans are high on him. I know Dave Paulson in some interviews, he seemed like a big fan of his. So we'll see. I just think that they need something to change in offense because once they lost Kyer, especially, they didn't really. AJ Wilson's great. He's not always a guy that's really going to just create for himself, though, I think. They kind of need a bigger perimeter threat, I think. So
They need another guy to help Javon Green out because he's their only guy who is like, all right, the shot clock is at 4. Who should we get it to that even though they're guarded, they can get a good shot off? And he's the only – like, Wilson's a good player overall, but he's not a guy like that. And I think guys like that are what will separate the top of the league from the bottom.
Yeah, I agree.
I think they're going to need to play some 2-point guard lineups throughout the year too. Really, their best offense is probably Miller at the 4 and Wilson at the 5 and just letting things open up because they were kind of a clogged toilet for half the season last year. And
yeah,
you know, it was more of a come and go thing. I like Xavier Johnson. I certainly don't feel like he's going to get benched unless Polite is truly something special, but he's certainly vulnerable.
Yeah. An area to be improved if you're the coaching staff. My fifth and final hot take, speaking of the parity in the league, I'm going to say that no team will finish better than 13-5. I think the bottom of the league is still pretty awful. As far as Fordham being obviously awful and then probably 3 or 4 more teams being candidates for 3-win seasons. But I feel like 1 through even we've said around 9, but even it's more like 1 through 11. If you include all of VCU, Mason, Rhodey, if all of those teams play to more towards their ceiling than the floor, I just feel like there's too much depth in the league for anyone to get past 13 wins. So that's what I got.
That's incredibly bold considering that the last time that – well, actually, hell, the last time that no one got above 14 was that 2016 season I referenced earlier. Mm-hmm. I was actually going to say no one's getting above 14. We saw 3 teams go 14-4 that year. St. Joe's lost on the final day of the season to finish 13-5 after Duquesne somehow beat them. And then they won the A-10 tournament anyway. I kind of agree with you here. I don't see anyone getting to 15 or above, but we haven't seen a 13-win champion in the 18-game schedule. So
I'm keeping it hot.
I mean, I think you're right, but I don't want to get into this that much because we're all just kind of not like talking about it that much. I just don't think we're going to have an 18-game schedule. I'm not super optimistic with everything going on, but I do agree. I think there's going to be a lot of parity. I'd say, like, assuming all the games do get played, I think we'd probably get 1 14-win team and then a couple 13s. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, like I said earlier, I don't think anyone's going to go 16-2 or 17-1. It's just with so many, you know, good, like – and there's not a ton of tournament teams, I don't think. Like, you know, I don't think we're going to be a 5-bid league like some people might think, some big homers. But I do think there's a lot of like borderline top 100, top 75 teams, which is going to make it tough to rack up a ton of wins, especially going on the road.
Yeah. And with a limited non-con, that might actually hurt the end's overall amount of bids too.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. I have no idea how like NCAA selections are going to go if there's no non-con or if it's limited. It's going to be weird.
UMass just today, they were supposed to play in a four-team tourney at Mohegan, and now they had someone test positive, so no dice on that. So,
yeah.
I thought it couldn't happen to me, and it already did, so.
I know, and we have famous UMass alum, too, Rick Pitino, recently calling for the season to get delayed. So, I don't know. We're a week away. It still seems like no one knows what's going to happen. I'm hoping by the time conference play rolls around in January, we have a better handle on things and keeping these teams from testing positive, just giving them the best environment possible. But,
yeah,
it's pretty uncertain this close to the season.
Mm-hmm.
We're kind of going off the rails here, but one thing I want to put in, I actually think that the short non-con is going to help the mid-majors of the world a little bit in terms of at-large bids, because now when you take 3 to 4 bye games off the schedule of these like seventh place Big 12 teams, now their overall record's going to be sitting at 500 or below. And the NCAA selection committee continues to go further and further with how many losses a team can have, and they're still willing to let them in. But the one thing they have shown us is that if you're only a game over 500, you're not getting an at-large bid. And so you think about somebody like the Trae Young Oklahoma team or the Colin Sexton Alabama team, where they were basically like 2 or 3 games above 500. You take those extra non-con games out of there, they're going to be under 500, and that's going to open things up for, let's say, maybe – I don't know, hypothetically, Duquesne goes 14-4 in conference. They don't play that great of a non-con schedule, but their record looks fantastic. That's a team that could really benefit from this.
Yeah, and besides not playing good teams, we also won't have as many opportunities to get terrible losses too. So,
yeah. So my actually – you say that I almost put this as one of my hot takes, is that Rhodey is going to just have at least one, if not two, horrendous what the hell happened to this team non-con losses, because that team's going to take a little while to gel with all the transfers, and there's going to be a game where Fats goes like 3 for 20. And I know the Ivy League's not playing, but basically it would be the equivalent of losing to Brown at home again.
Yeah. I haven't seen their schedule. Do they have a lot of bad loss opportunities on it?
They don't have their schedule out yet. That's why it's not a hot take, because I couldn't be concrete enough with it.
It's a potential hot take?
Yeah, it's a potential one. So yeah. I'll wrap up the Power 8 hot takes segment right here with the player of the year in the A-10 this year will not be someone on the preseason first team. So to run through that real quick, that is – Kellen Grady, Jalen Crutcher, Trey Mitchell, Fats Russell, Jacob Gilliard, Jordan Goodwin.
Okay.
I'm going to take 3 of those guys out of this discussion right now. I don't think Davidson or Rhodey will be anywhere near good enough for Grady or Fats to win it. I also think Jacob Gilliard's basically a lock to be on first team. I don't think he's got any chance at player of the year, because so much of his value comes on defense. His offensive numbers are not going to be impressive enough to win it. So basically at this point, Trey Mitchell and Jalen Crutcher are the only two guys that I think can win it, even if their team doesn't win the conference. But even then, they're probably going to have to at least be top 3. So beyond them, Jordan Goodwin can win if St. Louis is in first. If Richmond wins the conference, I actually think Golden ends up winning, because he's going to just put up the more impressive offensive numbers.
And he's been there 19 years too.
Yeah, so. He's never going to leave. If the Bonnies win, Lofton probably takes it. And actually, I think the one where it becomes wide open is if Duquesne wins, either Weathers or Carey could be good enough to get them to that point. But that's probably the scenario where maybe a third place Jalen Crutcher wins it. But if you were asking me to bet, is it someone from the Carey's for the Carey Weathers Golden Lofton group versus the first team? I'm going to take those four guys, especially because I think right now that Bonaventure, Duquesne, or Richmond combined have over a 70% chance of winning the conference. I'm going to go with my player of the year coming from someone out of that group of four.
Fair enough. I'm on Team Crutcher, but I know you don't buy Dayton as much as I do, so that's the huge difference right there.
If you're right and Dayton wins the conference, Jalen Crutcher will be player of the year, and we probably won't even have a debate on the pod about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say, like, I didn't have any issue with the preseason first team other than that it had six players instead of five, but no, I think there's a lot of talent this year. There's a lot of great seniors, too, so I wouldn't be that surprised to see it come from outside the preseason first team, especially when I think when John Axel won it a couple years ago. I think he might have been on the third team even. So, yeah, I think that's a good take. There's a lot of talent this year.
So, real quick, before we go to our over-unders, we've basically all touched on it real quick. Who do you guys have as the double bye teams?
I'll set it off. I got Dayton 1, Richmond 2, St. Louis, and then UMass sneaking up at 4.
All right. I think still TBD, but I think I'm going with Dayton 1, Richmond 2. I like Duquesne at 3, and then the biggest power rate hot take of them all, Davidson passing St. Louis for number 4.
That is a good one, man.
I've gone back and forth a ton, but at this moment, I'm going Bonnies 1, St. Louis 2, Richmond 3, Duquesne 4, with Dayton and UMass being the other two who could maybe get up there.
Mm-hmm. Wait, Tyler, did you have St. Louis in your top 4?
Yeah, I have them too. I bumped
them. Okay, I missed that. I was about to say the 3-bid league is going to be even more hated by the Billikens if you didn't either. But at least one of us likes them. We have to hedge our bets.
No, because the more that I think about a universe where it might only take you 14 games to win the conference, I've said before, I'm extremely confident that SLU's getting to 13 or above. I'm just not sure they have the ceiling to get much higher than that, so... Sure. If it's a dogfight, that really favors St. Louis, just like an actual dogfight game. All right, so for our second part, I think this one will be a lot shorter. We all came up with some over-under lines. This is the only tradition that has survived to year 3 of the pod so far. We intentionally did not share them with each other beforehand, and I know especially with some of the ones I came up with, I just kind of want you guys to come up with answers off the cuff. I didn't want to give you a chance to overthink them. So, you know, I'm pretty sure I have more than both of you, so I'll start things off. We just talked about St. Louis. Gibson Jimerson's three-point percentage, over under 39.5% this year. He was a shade above – he was at about 43% last year in limited games due to his injury.
Over.
That's a good number. I'd say he'll be like 38, 39. I'll say barely under, but that's a good line for him.
I'll go over. I just like – it's the same thing as what you were saying with TJ Weeks. I just like his stroke. I feel like even if he falls a little bit, I still see him low 40s.
Yeah, I'd say for me, like, I just have him going a little under compared to where he was last year. I just think he's going to have more volume, so that'll be an adjustment. But he's still going to make a ton of threes, and that's going to be big for St. Louis.
Yeah,
I'm going to take the slight over. I think he rounds to 40 but doesn't actually get there just because he's going to get so many open shots when teams clog the paint. We've seen that over and over again. He'll have nights where he maybe gets 5 looks where there's not a defender in sight. And while I think SLU fans are probably hyping him up too much, if he's going to get 5 open looks on a certain night, he's going to go 4 for 5 on those. So.
Yeah, I'll go next with will St. Louis eclipse 60% from the line? They were at 58 last year. What do you got?
Yes, this was actually I wanted to make one of my hot takes that they wouldn't finish last in free throw percentage, but then I realized how much of a jump they actually had to make to get there.
Oh God!
They have better shooters. I continue to believe that Goodwin will be at least a slightly better shooter this year. He takes more free throws than anybody on that team. So I'll take the over. I think they're going to be a little bit better from the line.
I don't remember who it came from, but like one of the players at A10 Media Day, or like Media Week, I guess it was this year, said that they're going to surprise some people and that they've been looking good shooting free throws in practice. And that just reminds me of all the MLB spring training, like this guy's in the best shape of his life quotes.
Yeah.
I just can't. I mean, 60%.
Rafaan Holloway is in the best shape of his life.
Yeah, like you could tell me that like Hassan French made 30 free throws in a row, and like I'm not going to believe it till I see it in the game. So
yeah,
I don't know. 60% is really not that much. I think I'm going to say under, but I will say like it's not quite as big of an issue now because at least they have someone in Javonte Perkins that can still ice a game, and they seem to be good at getting him the ball when it counts. So yeah. I think as a team, they're still going to stink, but I don't think it's going to cost them too many games like down the stretch just because they do have him, and Jimerson's another guy that can knock him down. Yeah. So
they'll be a little bit smarter about what to avoid.
I think so.
Yeah. What do you got?
I really trust Perkins at the line, so I want
to. I do too.
He's the first guy I've felt that way for SLU in years.
Yeah. All right.
So this one, it's not really just about this season. It's kind of really something I wanted to ask you, SLU, or Stu, talking about the villain.
Noted SLU fan.
All right, wanted to ask this to you, Stu. Trey Mitchell. Uh-huh. This might be just a bad question, but I'm kind of curious what you think.
No bad Trey Mitchell question.
Over under 3.5 years playing in college. Is there any chance he's good enough to leave early?
I'm going to say under. I'm going to be an NBA optimist for Trey.
Okay.
I'm not sure what that actually looked like because I'm not sure what it is that scouts care about as much, especially since he's kind of like he's kind of that in-betweener size where he's like Paul Millsap height. So it's tough to say. He probably wouldn't be able to be a five, at least in the way that he is right now in the NBA. So I don't know how it will translate, but I'm going to be optimistic about his pure talent, and I think he'll find a way to figure it out and that somebody will bet on him.
Okay.
I'm taking the over with the asterisk of saying that he will eventually make it into the NBA, at least for a cup of coffee. He certainly has that talent, and you know what? If this was 1995, I'd say under easily, but in this year's NBA, he's going to have to become more versatile on defense. He's going to have to continue to improve that three-point shot. I believe that he gets there, but I think it's going to take time, and he's going to need all 4 years to truly develop. But I could definitely see him as maybe an early to mid second round pick in what would that be, the 2022 draft, 2023
yeah.
draft?
23, I think. Yeah. Yeah, that's fair.
I don't even have an answer to my own question because I'm not an NBA guy. I don't know what the scouts look for, but I don't know. I think he'll make it at some point. He's just got so much skill, and he's just going to be exciting to watch this year with such a big freshman season. It'll be interesting to see how much he can build on that.
Yeah, I feel like with one thing that he has, even though he's kind of that in-between size, is that he has incredible footwork, and I feel like that's dying art, and I feel like there will be some team that appreciates that or some scout that does. You want to set it off with another one, Tyler?
Yeah, so keeping with the idea of guys taking a leap in their second year, over under 3.5 sophomores among the 18 all-conference spots. So preseason, Trey Mitchell's on there, Bones Highland's on there. There's always a sophomore who surprises us and makes it. I'm not sure who necessarily that will be, but I think it's pretty safe to say we'll get at least three. The question is, can we get above that number? And Stu, I want to start off this question by asking you, TJ Weeks is technically a freshman, right?
Yep. Yeah, he got the waiver. So.
Okay, so that makes this tougher to get over.
Well, Hyungjin Lee.
I keep the stat.
That's one.
Yeah, I like Lee. I don't know if I like him to that extent, but I do like Jameson Battle. But I don't know if GW is going to be good enough for that. But they usually find room on the third team for a guy with good numbers, even on a bad team. So I'll go Battle, and then you got Bones and Trey. That's it for me. I'm under.
I'd add.
Oh no, TJ. I'll take TJ. So I'll go. Yeah.
I think like probably under because there's a lot of experience. One guy is a sophomore I'd throw out as a sleeper. Maybe Tyler Burton from Richmond, just since he's going to be on a good team. And also, he's got a chance to start now with Nick Sherrod being hurt. The problem is with Richmond, they already have three or four other all-conference players, and they're not going to put the whole team on there no matter how good they are. So probably won't make it, but I think he could have a good season. It's tough. I think it's just going to have to be someone way off the radar to break out because I really can't think of too many other guys.
If Sherrod couldn't make it last year, Burton won't make it this year. And right. Then same goes for Yuri Collins. I'll take the under. I think basically the one path to four is Mitchell, Highland, Kyungjoon Lee, and then basically just pick your GW guy. It could be Nelson. It could be Battle. It could even be Chase Parr.
Yeah. And I realize I just contradicted myself by saying TJ. Yeah, So I am under. So
maybe Cameron Brown just averages 20 for St. Joe's.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Yeah, you like him.
I weirdly like Cameron Brown way too much.
No, he is a good stroke.
Yeah.
He's a good stroke, but his shooting numbers were terrible last year. So yeah. The eye test contradicted the stat sheet.
Yeah.
I need to get my eyes checked, I guess. I got a really niche one. So no one in the conference, some people came close, but no one in the conference last year went for 15, 5, and 5 for averages. Do you think anyone will do it this year? I'll set the over-under at 0.5.
I'm trying to think who would have the best chance. I think
so the people that were close were like Goodwin. Daly was 4.3. Rebounds, so he was or assists, so he was really close. Obi Toppin was missing the assists, obviously, but his others were easily there. A lot of people almost, but no one.
That should have been a give me, but you know, Yuri Collins robbed us of Point Goodwin, which I wanted to happen so badly last season.
Yeah.
Man, I'm gonna take the over. Not being entirely sure who. It could be Goodwin. I think that with St. Joe's actually having other competent offensive players besides Ryan Daly, he's actually probably the most likely. And I'm going to throw in one crazy sleeper knowing he almost certainly can't get there in assists. But Grant Golden, it's not impossible.
Yeah. They got a lot of shooters. So who knows?
If they play their offense right, he's going to get at least 3.5 to 4 a game.
Yeah.
I like the Grant Golden pick. I don't think Goodwin's not going to get the assists with Yuri Collins being the primary point guard. If Ryan Daly couldn't do it last year, having the ball in his hands as much as he did, I don't think he's going to do it this year. I thought Jalen Crutcher had more rebounds, but he only had 3.2. He had 4 as a sophomore. Actually, I think Crutcher – yeah, he had 4 rebounds and 5.7 assists as a sophomore. Those actually both went down while we started shooting more.
Yeah, he could be a good pick.
He can do it.
Lost some size, yeah.
I'd say him or Grant Golden has the best chance, but it's gonna be tough for Crutcher to get the rebounds and tough for Golden to get the assists, I think. But that's a good question.
So I'll throw out one more candidate, and then sorry, Matt, I'm actually gonna jump you because this is related to one of the ones I have. He's actually only at 4.2 rebounds. Maybe Kellen Grady. I actually have as one of mine, Kellen Grady over under assists per game at 3.5. He was at 2.5 last year. I've said it over and over again. I think the path to Davidson being good is Grady being a pretty solid point guard this year. Mm-hmm. So Kellen Grady over under 3.5. Actually, no, that's too low. Over under 4 assists a game.
Ooh, I was gonna take the over for 3.5. I'll say over. They're gonna have enough good guards that can. I think there's gonna be a lot of guys averaging assists for Davidson just since they move the ball so well as a team. But But I do think Grady's going to have a big year. I just think four is a little too high for all the shooting he's going to be doing.
Yeah, because what did Jag have last year?
That's a good question.
He was only at 4.3.
Yeah.
Okay.
Jag's numbers were bad on the season as a whole because he was just so beat up in the non-conference, and it dragged down his averages a lot. He was at 5 his sophomore year, and you could round up to 5 his junior year.
If he was at like 7 last year and those had to be replaced by whoever the primary ball handlers were, I'd take the over, but I'll go under just because I feel like Grady will be the primary ball handler, but no one will be to the extent that he was.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of agree with you, Matt, where it's like they spread the ball around so much that I feel like a lot of people could be at like around 3, but no one will get over that hump that we're talking about.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm
running out of serious over-under, so I'll do the one from last year, which it hit his first 2 years, did not hit last year, but we're going to do the over-under 1.5 technical fouls for Anthony Grant. Got one against Richmond, didn't get another one later in the season, which I was disappointed on, but, you know, surprisingly, as a seemingly calm dude, he's gotten way more technical fouls than Archie Miller ever did at Dayton. So yeah. This is a very niche Dayton question, but I'm going to say over because I always root for technical fouls.
I'm taking the over because as a Dayton fan, I'm fully prepared for there to be some frustrating moments this season. Because this team does have a ton of talent, but a lot of the talent in the front court is super young. And yeah. There's going to be at least one time where Anthony Grant just explodes on a ref, just mainly because he's pissed off at his own guys. And then he'll find his way into another one like in the Richmond game. I think this is pretty easy over.
I'll go over too. Just I'm kind of rooting for Tex too. Keep the game exciting. So yeah, not knowing much about the situation or about his tendencies on the sideline. I don't know. Is he taking off his jacket and rolling up the sleeves? Oh,
the jacket always comes off at halftime. Yeah, that could be another one. Over under 0.5 games wearing a jacket in the second half, because that's never happened. How about this though? What's an argument going to sound like with no fans in the crowd, if that's the case? Like we might get to hear some more a little bit. It might be disappointing that Greg Marshall's out of the game now. Could have had a good one over at Wichita State this year.
Can we TV 14 the Duquesne ESPN Plus games? Because, God, I want to hear Dan Brott mic'd up uncensored.
Oh, God, yeah.
Dude, the St. Louis-Duquesne game with Travis Ford on the other sideline. I mean, man. Yeah, that would be fun with no fans.
Just F-bombs and squeaky sneakers on the field.
I wish Carl Hobbs would have been back for this too.
Gosh, that's something – that's going to be weird. Like, I'm assuming the A-10 gyms aren't going to pump in crowd noise. So I know, like, some schools are announcing very limited crowds, but it's not going to be the same. So I don't know. That'll be something to keep an eye on.
They should – have you heard – I forget who it was on Twitter, but somebody said that each one should send a fan ambassador to or wherever it is, just so there's one from each fan base going nuts.
Yeah.
I'm going to apply for the UMass spot.
Duquesne literally spent non-conference play in a 1,000-seat arena last year. This is not good. They might be prepared for this.
Yeah, they've been practicing.
Yeah.
Let's see. I got another one here. Better odds, a 4-bid league or a winless Fordham?
So I thought you were going to say 4 or 2. And I actually feel like – I actually was going to say earlier that I think it's more likely to go 4 than 2.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, I think the jam up at the top and these crappy power conference teams losing their bye games means – we're finding a way to get to 3 and maybe more. I do not hate this Fordham team this year. They're not going winless this season.
Okay. You got to know. I'd probably go better odds on 4-bid league too, just because I feel like they'll find something in a season where nobody's really prepared, that could play to their advantage, where they're not getting totally outcoached. But I don't know. It's possible. Never count.
Remember, they actually have a good defense.
Yeah. They'll win their game 47-43.
Yeah.
Yeah. In a normal season, like with a full non-conference, I feel actually decent about a four-bid league, which is bold of me to say after we've incorrectly predicted that the last 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
But, man, I think Fordham's going to be real bad. I think they could be as bad or worse than last year. Just, like, their defense is good, but I don't know how they're going to score. Yeah. Kind of the same problem as last year. Yeah. I'd say four-bid league is a little bit more likely just because something crazy could happen. Like Tyler was saying, how they're not going to put teams with losing records in the field. Maybe that actually works to the A-10's advantage, but mm-hmm. I don't know. I'd say I feel decent about getting three. Yeah.
Me too. Yeah. I feel really good about three, and I'm wavering on four. I'd say no right now, but wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, Fordham also got a big advantage getting a home-and-home against GW, because that's the one team that they actually have a fighting chance against.
They could sweep again, yeah.
By the way, the Ivy League's out, so that's one extra at-large bid this year. Oh. So the 2016 Bonnies would have made the tournament.
Oh, don't bring that up.
Oh.
So I'll go to my next one. Over under. I think this is probably the most hotly debated team just across A10 Twitters to where they'll finish. Mm-hmm. Over under 7.5 conference wins for the VCU Rams.
Way over. They're gonna win 9, I think. That's not way over, but no.
Safely over, yeah.
I think this is kind of like me just being biased, and I'd call it like a program pick, but I just think VCU's status as one of the top basketball programs in the A-10, like, that's going to prevent them from being too bad this year. I just think they get too good of recruits. I don't think Rhodes is as bad of a coach as some people think. Mm-hmm. They're not going to contend, but I feel good about saying they'll win 8 or 9 games at least.
The thing, I'm going to say under. And I, as far as their talent, I think they could go over. But just looking at their schedule pairings, the teams that they play twice are pretty brutal.
Yeah, that's true.
Davidson, Dayton, George Mason, that's not – that you can sweep that. But Davidson, Dayton, George Mason, Rhode Island, and Richmond all twice. And that's a pretty tough slate for a team where we don't know what it's going to look like, but experience could be especially important too. And then – where is their experience coming from is as far as guys that are going to be getting the bulk of the minutes, at least, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So
I'm going under. I think this is a team that actually gets really hurt by the shortened non-conference. Mm-hmm. They just got so many random pieces that need to prove themselves. And for them to be good in conference, I think they actually kind of needed to just take their lumps in the non-con. And even if it meant just getting killed in some games, they're going to need time to figure this thing out, and now they're going to have to start to push that into January.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'm wrong, and the whole the recruiting thing's a good point. Maybe Baldwin and Jameer Watkins end up being as good as the VCU fans say, but unless one of those two's a star, I think VCU's closer to the pillow fight than they are to the top seven.
I'd put them towards the bottom. I think I have them at like 11 right now behind Mason.
That would be funny. Like, I think VCU is going to be better, but I don't know. I'd like to see the reaction.
Yeah. I just don't know who to like take out. I guess you could take out Mason, but.
Yeah.
I honestly think Wilson's just going to be too good for Mason to be in the pillow fight. You can say the same thing about Daly, but Mason's got better role guys than St. Joe's does.
Sure. Yeah. I got another over under for specific teams. What do you got with St. Joe's at 4.5 conference wins?
I'll take the over. What did they have last year? Oh, they only have 2.
They had 2.
And they have a tough schedule.
I'll take the over. I actually had them right at 5 and 11.
I'm gonna tentatively take the over. I just think that Daly's going to carry them in a few games. They're getting some big-time transfers from Gonzaga and Xavier.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I just – it's kind of like the same thing as VCU. I think St. Joe's is too good of a program to just suck that bad 2 years in a row. Like, yeah. they're going to be a pillow fight team, I'm pretty confident in saying, but I think they can win 5 or 6, get up to, like, gosh, 12th place instead of 13th.
Yeah, they definitely can. I'm going to take the under for now just because of how hard their schedule is, but.
Yeah.
It's man. Close.
Their defense is also kind of a dumpster fire, but
it is.
They're going to – if Daly's actually healthy the whole year, they're going to be able to score.
Yeah. I wish I had been able to see more of, like, what Damir Bishop looks like.
Right. Yeah, those guys can be exciting.
Yeah, huge pieces of the rotation. I wish I just knew more about them.
Right. All right, well, we have not talked about LaSalle at all, not once. So
I don't think you said the word LaSalle yet.
No, we usually don't. Usually that only happens if we do a podcast that goes this
way. The unwritten rules of the pod. not
pretty much.
But so, how about sorry, Gipper Grove.
Yeah. Sorry, Dr. Johns. Jeez.
The homie, yeah.
All right. I feel like two of the most unknown players in the conference are Clifton Moore, the Indiana transfer, and then Jack Clark, who missed all of last year with an injury, but seems like they have a chance to be two of their best players. I'll say over under combined 25 points a game for those guys. Can they break out and, you know, surprise us as double digit scorers, or are they just gonna kind of
more?
What?
You said 25 for Clark and Moore?
Combined, yep, those two a game.
I'm going to go under for now just because I feel like most of they have a lot of guards that can score.
Yeah.
But that's a good number.
I think Clark was at like 11 or 12 as a freshman, I think, but it was only like 10 games. It wasn't very many at all.
And they kind of need someone to be like that 14 or 15 guy if they want to be any good. And he's one of the guys that could. So that's definitely an argument for it. I'm going to say no, though, I think, if I had gun to my head.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to take the easy over because basically, like Stu just said, one of these two has to be good for LaSalle to avoid the basement. So,
yeah. I don't know if they'll avoid the basement, though, is my thing.
Yeah.
I think this could easily go over and they could still end up in the basement. But,
yeah.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of moving parts there.
Right. They just, LaSalle's a weird team because they don't have anyone that really, like, they don't have a star. I feel like Clifton Moore could be that guy coming from somewhere like Indiana, but yeah, he just has such a little track record that we don't really know. And then Carter played ball. Yeah.
Like they have, like, a whole rotation of guys that could be, like, the third best player on a good team.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, who's that dude, you know?
Yeah. I guess I'll say over just because I don't think the other guys are – no one else is going to score more than about like 10 or 12, I think. So
yeah,
I'll say over for those guys, I think.
Fair enough. All right. Do you guys see more of these? Or?
So I still got three more. So.
I'm pretty much done. You can rip through yours if you want.
We'll rattle them off. I saved my three favorites for last. Trey Mitchell – 20-point, 10-rebound games this season, conference and non-conference. I'm setting the line at 6.5. Believe it or not, he only had 2 last year. He had a lot of 9-rebound games where he scored a lot, mm-hmm. A lot of either 15- or 17-point games when he got a lot of rebounds. But he only eclipsed this mark at home against Dayton and when he fouled the guy at the end of the Rhode Island game.
Yeah. Oh God, speaking of things we don't talk about, it's LaSalle and the Fats Russell foul. Those are the two. I'm going to say, was it 6.5?
6.5.
I'm actually going to go under on that one just because the team as a whole is so much deeper. I don't think he'll have as many 20-point games as on the scoring front. And then on the rebounding front, we got a little bigger down low. We lost Samba, but we picked up DeAndre Dominguez, Ronnie DeGray. I think DeGray is going to see a lot of time. Gasparini is by all accounts and by what I can see on YouTube, more talented than DeJerry Baptiste. So I imagine he'll play in relief a little bit more than he did, especially if we're a better team and don't need Trey out there as much. But that's a good line. I'd probably have like 5 or 6, but I'll go under.
Yeah, I was thinking under too. Yeah, it seemed like they got some newcomers that can help out on the glass a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have too much to add. I'd say under, but he'll definitely have more than last year. I'd say 4 or 5 or 6.
Yeah. I'm kind of torn on, is the depth going to hurt Trey because mm-hmm. now he's passing to way more shooters, or is he just going to go bananas and average, 23 and 12 because now he's not doubled as much, you know? It's, a weird dichotomy that I can't figure out.
Yeah.
You know, Stu's like a big-time shark better when it comes to UMass. I think he just moved the line down. It's a... Some books are offering up at 5 at this point.
Okay.
I'll take the slight under. I actually think, contrary to what Stu said, that it's going to be easier for him to get to 10 rebounds than 20 points, especially if Preston Santos is out for a foreseeable amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
I think Mitchell's going to be a beast on the boards. I think this team's got enough offensively that he's not going to be putting up a ton of just dominant 25, 30-point games like he was at the end of last year.
Yeah. Yeah, it could go either way, man.
So, anybody – you guys are both out of over-under lines,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, pretty
okay.
much.
Mm-hmm.
All right, I got two more to wrap this up. So, one unfortunate victim of the shortened college basketball season – is going to end up being Jacob Gilliard, who in a normal year with a normal amount of games had an outside shot at becoming the NCAA's all-time steals leader. He actually he needs 110 to get there, but unless he becomes like vintage Gary Payton, he's probably not going to be able to put up enough a game. So I think he should be aiming for a different steals record, but one that's also pretty impressive. He is 89 back of Pepe Sanchez of Temple for the all-time A-10 record, which would also put him fourth all-time.
Okay.
By the way, for reference, he's 109 back of the all-time record, and he is 98 back of Briante Weber for the Richmond area record. So the over-under, can Jacob Gilliard get 89.5 steals and pass Pepe Sanchez?
What do you got? I went first on the last one, Matt.
I'd say, gosh, I think in a normal season over, he's so great on defense, but mm-hmm. I just don't know if we're going to get enough games I'm worried about. I'd say, normally I'd give it to him, but I'm not super confident about what's going to happen with the number of games played this year, so I'm going to have to say under, unfortunately.
I'll take a similar route where I'll go that he will have the averages if there was a normal season mm-hmm. to do it. But because I'll be an optimist with the A-10 schedule and expect 18 there. But after that, it could be who knows, 4, you know?
Yeah.
So I just don't think he'll have the volume to do it. But I do think he will, if it's not a cop-out, I think he would do it.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah.
I'm taking the over. He was at 3.2 steals a game last year. I actually think that that's going to go up based on how he closed out the season. The last time we saw him, he was just doing things to Sincere Carey that should be illegal on a basketball court. That man couldn't dribble over the line against him. So, but let's stay conservative. Say he only needs 3.2. So he would only need to play 28 games. Right mm-hmm. now, the regular season's 27. Let's say 3 to 4 games get canceled. Mm-hmm. I actually think what's going to end up happening in the A-10 is everyone's going to play at least 16 games because they have things pretty well set up to be able to do makeup games. I think the NCAA is going to relax some of the quarantine rules once the season gets rolling. So mm-hmm. let's say they only lose 3 or 4 games. Richmond's a good team. They should expect to play three A-10 tournament games, one or two NCAA tournament games. That gets them to 28 easily. So I'm going to take the over. And okay. If they can make a run to the second weekend of the NCAA tournament, he's got a chance to pass Weber. And I can't remember the guy who's in second place all time. He could pass him too.
Did you say Pepe Sanchez?
Pepe Sanchez is fourth all time in NCAA history. First in A-10 history. So I think he passes Pepe. I think he's got a shot at Briante Weber. And he could very well finish second in NCAA history by the end of this year.
Very possible.
So, sorry, Stu.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, what for the very last one, what'd you save for us?
So I wanted this to be last.
Mm-hmm.
So over under half number of drinks that we see Keith Danbrock consume on the sidelines this year that are not Pure Leaf iced teas. This could be a water. This could be a Gatorade. Anything that is not his Pure Leaf bottle. I'm setting the line at half. He only has to take one sip this season on camera.
No, he has to stay true to his form and where he came from. So I'm going to say under.
Yeah. I want to go with the under. Do we also think he's going to be rocking the quarter zip again this year?
Hopefully.
Without a doubt. There's no fans in the stands to impress.
Yeah, the whole Pure Leaf thing.
He's the most appropriately dressed coach in possibly all of major sports.
What, you don't like?
Top five, at least.
You don't like baseball managers?
It's Dan Brott and it's Mike Bray during Notre Dame's early season tournaments when he wears like the Hawaiian shirts and dresses like he's going to the beach.
Yep.
Well, at least like if you're going to dress casual, I know like when Dayton used to be in these tournaments, Archie Miller would always button all of the buttons. Like, no, you don't do that with a golf shirt. So hopefully, yeah, I think Dan Brott can pull it off, I guess. And yeah, for the Pure Leaf bet, I'll say under as well.
I'm taking over. I think the pandemic affects this. There'll be some situation where like maybe there's a curfew in whatever state he's in and all the 7-Elevens are closed pregame. They could end up potentially in a bubble for the A-10 tournament or the NCAA tournament. Maybe they make a run to the A-10 finals. He doesn't pack enough. He's hyper the night before. He's just chugging them like Red Bulls to keep the energy up. Something's going to happen. He's going to have a game where he needs to go to the Gatorade cooler.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I like it. I mean, you're more plugged into Duquesne, so I think that's a good answer.
I already put every bank account that I have on the under, so I hope you're wrong. But
so speaking of bank accounts, we're going to end on this note. Stu, you were the one who discovered this, but Bovada already has the conference tournament odds out. So real quick, St. Louis plus 250, Richmond plus 255, Dayton plus 270, Davidson's at 10-1, as is Bonaventure, Duquesne at 15, Rhodey at 20, UMass VCU at 30, Mason at 50, GW at 80. And then the rest are in the triple digits. So anything that kind of catches your eye four months out.
I would take a flyer on UMass did you say 30-1?
30.
Yep.
Yeah, if they're the same as VCU's odds, I would drop, you know, a friendly $10 on them, because why not at that point?
Yeah. I'd say for me, I mean, as a homer, I'll tell you to bet the farm on Dayton and win 2.7 farms, but I love Duquesne's odds at 15-1. I think I have them in third place right now, and I think they're just more talented. There's not that big of a gap between them and the teams that are in the like 2-1 range on here. I think Rhode Island's gonna stink. Like, I have them in the lower middle of the pack, but I also think like their ceiling's so high that at 20-1, I don't hate it. Like, I could very well see them just winning like 5 or 6 A-10 games, but I could also, you know, if the transfers all work out, they could be a really dangerous team. So
I've seen very few people call Rhodey like a 9-9 or 8-10, 10-8 team. Like, it's either, oh, they're going to be top 4, book it, or pillow fight time. You know, it's one of the...
See, I feel like it's going to be one of those, but I'm kind of just like just picking it in the middle where I have them now because I don't know which one it's going to be.
Yeah.
But I agree. Like, they're either going to be real good or real bad. Although I do think it could be like 2 years ago when they heated up at the end of the season after kind of a rocky, just up and down regular season, and they knocked off ECU in the A-10 tournament. Yeah, I could see something like that happening again.
They could enter as the 7th seed at 8-10 and win it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Especially in a, like, a who-knows year.
Yeah.
Duquesne at 15-1 is utterly absurd. I know it's been, like, a half a decade since they've won a tournament game, but...
I mean, same for Dayton.
They're going to have two seniors and a junior starting, possibly two juniors if Norman stays in the starting lineup. Mm-hmm. And, like, the path to them being the best team in the conference is not that ridiculous. It's... Carey takes the step that we've all thought he was going to take, but his inconsistencies prevented him from doing. Michael Hughes just cuts down the fouls a little bit, and one or two of the hypothetical shooters turn out to be real shooters. Like, mm-hmm. It's not that far-fetched that Duquesne's a top three team by any stretch of the imagination. And for them to be at 15-1 when, like, Dayton is at plus 270 – I don't see any reason at all for that big of a gap other than just name recognition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that seems fair. And what's Bonna? Did you say plus 1,000?
The Bonnies are 10-1. I don't love that or hate it. I kind of like it.
Yeah. I almost feel like no team should be as low as 250, you know? Like, no team is...
Yeah. I don't like any of those teams enough. Like, I wouldn't bet on those right now, but I don't know. I mean, I think, Duquesne at 15-1, that's the one that really jumps out. Cause I don't think they're that far behind those other top teams, and you're getting way better of a price.
No, you like Davidson, Matt, but I think like I'd rather have Duquesne than Davidson. So
yeah, I'm surprised Davidson's 10-1. Cause they're not really getting a ton of respect by most people. I guess. But, I mean, they were also recognized for being bad last year. So, I don't know. That's a good one. But it's exciting to see those odds out there. I didn't think we'd be seeing A-10 odds this early, but pretty cool stuff.
Yeah. And you know what? It's too early. Like, no one should be under 3-1, especially in a conference this tight.
Yeah.
And, you know, if SLU finishes in the top three and they're healthy – and they're plus 250 going into Brooklyn, I would probably feel really, really good about placing that bet. But it's way too early in a season where we have no idea what might happen. God forbid they could lose one of their key three guys to an injury. Like, mm-hmm. there's no value in taking that bet. But the odds aren't terrible.
Yeah, hopefully there's nothing like at tournament time, like a positive test, and one of the favorites or something needs to take 2 weeks off, you know?
Yeah.
Hopefully we get this stuff out of the way early.
No respect for the defending champs. Fordham's at 200-1. Ouch. I love that they have twice the odds of anyone else. Like, even St. Joe's is 100-1. It's pretty funny.
Right. Can I bet $1?
Yeah, I might as well take a flyer. Defense wins championship. See if they can repeat.
Yeah.
All right.
So I think that does it for our hot takes and over-unders. Stu, thank you for joining us. Anything you want to say in closing? Anything you got to plug?
Nothing to plug. I'm still writing occasionally for Busting Brackets. Not as much because my wife and I just bought a house, so that's been keeping us busy moving in here. And obviously everything going on, but here's to a relatively full schedule and all our teams being in the at least top five of the standings. That's what I'll say.
And, you know, we trash on John Rothstein a lot, and he's been getting really giddy with over the last week as we see more and more teams suspend practices, just reminding us that we are about a week away from having college basketball. And, you know, on that point, he's right. We've seen with college football that the people, the powers that be, will keep pushing forward I don't know how many teams are going to play on Blackout Wednesday. I don't know how many of our favorite teams we're going to get a chance to watch, but I do know that there will be college football the day, not college football. There will be college basketball the day before Thanksgiving. That I feel very certain about. I feel very certain that they're going to finish the season. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a weird ride, but I've become incredibly confident that they are going to make this happen no matter what.
Yeah. I won't jinx it, but agreed. Gotcha.
Yeah.
So on that note, we thank our guest Stu Ledecky for coming on. Be sure to check out his work on Busting Brackets. And we thank you all for listening. If you enjoyed the pod, give us 5 stars on iTunes. And as we head into the season, we'll be doing our mailbags again. Send us any questions to our Twitter @3BidLeaguePod. Or if you're not a Twitter person, you can send them to our email, 3BidLeague@gmail.com. Thanks, and everybody stay safe out there.